You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 75, A Tidal Wave of Programming. Today on the podcast, we are joined by special guest Jensen Shields. We talked about how Cineplex's failing movie theater business is causing them to consider creating original programming a la Netflix and Amazon, and how other companies are jumping on the original programming bandwagon to varying degrees of success. We also talked about how Apple is interested in this area and how they're sort of getting their feet wet as well. And it remains to be seen whether or not that will work for them. We also talked about Apple and how there's a general perception that Apple doesn't innovate anymore on their iPhone design. And we talked about how innovation is an incremental thing, how there's actually a lot of innovation going on. If you look at the guts of the iPhone, year over year, massive improvements, but a lot of people don't recognize that. The average consumer doesn't recognize that because they see the same design every year. So it's interesting to kind of go into that, especially with Jensen, because he is no longer an iPhone user. And so he had a very different perspective on this. And we talked a little bit about that in this episode. So stay tuned. And now the show. All right, so today on the podcast, we have a special guest, Jensen Shields. That is your real name, is it not?
It is my real name,
wow,
yes.
That's amazing. Lucky you. And so I'm looking at your Twitter profile here. It says you are a BCIT broadcast student, and your skill sets include acting, chefing, producing, climbing, riding, and hiking. Now, have you used all of those skills at one time? Is that even possible?
You know, I believe it could be, because while hiking, you have to make your own food. But I've never been on a mountainside with my snowboard, being able to ride and hike and make food at the same time. And in terms of acting, am I not always acting? Because I may or may not be a lizard person.
Ooh, now this podcast just got extremely philosophical.
Well, you know, I like to take things into the ether at times.
So this week, I kind of wanted to get into TV. Well, let me just start over. So this week, I wanted to get into creating new programs and this whole space that Netflix is absolutely crushing right now with original programming. Now, everybody else wants to jump onto this bandwagon. That's fine. But I just read this week that Cineplex Odeon, the massive, massive franchise of movie theaters across Canada. Are they Canadian only, Michael? They're not American, are they?
Yeah, they're Canadian only.
Okay. So now this theater chain, because of just record attendance drops over the last like quarter over quarter, year over year, they've had something like 33% attendance drop, which is huge. So now they're trying to, well, it seems like they're kind of in panic mode. They need to try to diversify. So now they want to get into creating their own content, which I guess is admirable, but I don't see it working all that well for them because they don't have the kind of capital, they don't have the resources, they don't have the clout that Netflix or even Amazon does. Actually, there's a prime example there. See what I just did there? Prime example.
Oh,
Amazon Prime.
Snap.
Yeah. Amazon Prime is obviously doing really well as well. I mean, I don't know comparatively speaking how it compares to Netflix, but obviously the big two are Amazon and Netflix. So now Cineplex wants to get into this. I mean, what do you two think about this? I mean, maybe let's start with you, Jensen.
Sure. Well, I find it interesting that these, when you go to a Cineplex or any sort of movie theater, the majority of their revenue is actually made on concessions. So that popcorn, that pop, that bag of Skittles altogether costing you $25, that's how they make their money. It's not the ticket sales. So you look at companies like Amazon, who make a gazillion dollars selling books and products, pre-made products, whatever. They have the clout. They have the funds to produce. And they also have a good understanding of what people are purchasing. So it's like their own market research, just like Netflix has their own market research. So when I look at Cineplex, they have the market research, but these are people that sell popcorn and chips. Like that's their bread and butter in terms of making money. So will they be able to afford losing out on a number of films? It's hard to say, because there's a lot of films being made that generally don't do very well. One thing that they could do well, though, is within their own theaters, promotion would be dirt cheap, because they wouldn't have to rent out the space. They would already have the space there for themselves. So that's like, that's their only edge, I think, that they really have.
No, that's a fair point, I think. I mean, I don't know what their finances look like right now, but I mean, doesn't this require a lot of startup capital? And I'm not sure if they really have that kind of money to do the same types of productions on the same level. I mean, because if you can't match what Netflix is doing,
well, I mean, I think they could probably fund like local Canadian content, basically like pull a CBC on it, maybe. They do have quite a lot of revenue, and they could kickstart some kind of program within their company if they wanted to, but. Yeah, to get something like that off the ground, you really need people with expertise that can kind of build that kind of system from the ground up. And I'm not sure that they have people like that. They might, but to just go, oh yeah, let's start making original content. Yeah.
Well, even if they don't, I mean, of course, they would have to hire a team of people to do that. And I'm sure there are plenty of talented people in Canada that could help them with that. But it just seems like it's not an insurmountable task, but they have such a tough road ahead of them. And it seems so risky to me. On the other hand, I mean, what else can they do? I mean, they need to do something. I don't know what else there is that they could possibly do to strengthen the old model of going to a theater. I mean, they did try to make some changes. Like they have a few years back, they introduced the VIP theater thing where you can pay a premium $20 a ticket and you get these luxury seats and you get, I think they even serve alcohol and food. And
I think alcohol is the future. I mean, when I have a cinematic experience, I'm not saying I always, you know, sneak in a little something to put in my pop, but it definitely adds to the experience. What I find shocking is the fact that they don't seem to think that there's the content and they need to make content. They have content. Maybe they just need to switch it up. There's the cinema on Burrard and Fifth, and there's like a little bar there. So before you go to the movies, you can have a beer. I think that's the future.
Well, and they have the whole VIP experience. There's the one near here and the new one on Marine Drive, the Marine Gateway Theater. They've got this entire upper floor with a full bar and restaurant, sort of. You can just order drinks and food. And in the VIP theater, there are these giant seats with trays and cup holders, and you just sit there and they bring the food to you and the drinks, and you can just sit there, watch a film with no children. It's 19 plus.
Right. That is a benefit. That's for sure.
And enjoy. And yeah, like that's providing an experience that people are looking for. And I think it's doing really well. It does cost a lot, though.
See, that's the thing for me. I mean, I can get that. I mean, obviously, it's not the same experience of being in front of a huge screen. But, I mean, in the comfort of my own home, I can watch a movie and drink, and it's great. And I don't have to deal with obnoxious people bringing their children into, you know, their you know, 6-month-year-old baby into a rated R movie, which shouldn't really be happening anyway. And I don't have to deal with loud people in a theater. So, I mean, maybe I'm not the target market, but I would never pay for a VIP movie experience. So, and I, again, I don't know how well that part is doing for them. But I mean, obviously there is a fundamental change. I don't know if it's a cultural change, but like the movie going experience just isn't the same, because you've got these things like Netflix that have really kind of siphoned away that business to some degree, at least. And of course, there's nothing that can truly replace that experience of going to the theater, seeing it on the big screen, being exposed to, like, you know, massive sound, Dolby Atmos. I mean, most people don't have that luxury of having that in their homes. So it is definitely a unique experience, but it's one of those things where it seems like less and less people want to pay $13 to see
$13,
you know, or 50. I guess, well, a lot of movies now are 3D. So
yeah, it's $20.
Yeah. You have to pay more money.
Oh yeah. $20. And then you go to the concession and it's like, hi, welcome to Cineplex. That'll be $8 for a regular soda.
Yeah.
It's welcome to hell.
And there's no such thing as tap water there. And that'll be like $5 for a bottled water.
No. Sometimes they'll give you one of those paper cones with about 4 ounces of water.
Oh, okay.
That's supposed to hold you off for the next 2.5 hours.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
So anyways, I mean, you know, Sony has even, well, they haven't done their original programming, but they did get into, actually, that's not true. Sony did do some original programming, I think. I mean, they had the live streaming, the live events thing. And I know they've done some of their own very, very specific PlayStation stuff, and they've done partnerships.
They've completely butchered Spider-Man to the point where they're going to be selling. They're not going to be. I don't know what they're going to do because I'm not a magician man. But there have been talks of Sony selling off their Sony Pictures subsidiary.
I really hope they do.
Because it's what.
But
is
this
it?
Next, just as an aside, I mean, on that topic though, this new Spider-Man movie is, even though technically a Sony picture, it is pretty much under the it's under the auspices of Marvel.
Movie.
So yeah. I mean, you might as well. So hopefully, it means that this movie is going to be good. But on the subject of Sony though, they've done some of their own programming, their own live events, and I know they've done partnerships to get original shows on, like, I think Power is a show. It was like a superhero show.
Powers.
Powers. I've never actually seen it, but it's like one. I mean, I don't know. I think they have what, like maybe a handful of shows. I don't even know how many they have. But anyways, I mean, obviously other people are trying to get in on this, and Amazon seems to be putting more and more money into their own original programming too. But, you know, choice is good. I think that's great for the market in general. I'm not very optimistic that Cineplex will be able to do well with it. Which actually leads me to the next topic, which is a longtime rumor, which, Michael, we've obviously broached this subject in the past, is Apple creating their own original programming. And it seems like lately there's been more of that sort of bubbling to the surface, and now there is this new show that Apple is doing on Apple Music for subscribers. I believe it's not free. I don't think, right? You do need a subscription.
Yes, and there's two shows. So they're working on a show based on Carpool Karaoke, the segment that James Corden does on his show, and they're going to have a bunch of celebrity guests and so on. So that's one of them. And then the other one of them is a somewhat cringeworthy reality show called Planet of the Apps.
Oh, I thought you were joking about that earlier.
I am not joking, unfortunately.
Oh, man.
So this is basically Shark Tank for app development. And among the judges, we have two people that you could argue belong there. Then Will.i.am, Jessica Alba, and Gwyneth Paltrow,
okay.
The Goop herself.
To what avail?
Well, these app developers must impress this panel, including probably the most cringeworthy part, a escalator pitch.
Right.
You've heard the term elevator pitch, where you pitch your project in the time it takes to go up a floor in an elevator. Well, on the stage of this show, they have a actual escalator, and the developer must pitch their app to one of the judges in the time it takes to go down the escalator.
Not up the escalator?
No.
Okay.
Or maybe it's up the escalator. I don't know.
I feel like up would be better.
I didn't actually watch the trailer because I didn't want to inflict that on myself.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. So, understandably, a lot of Apple fans are quite vexed by this turn of events.
Well,
the consensus is essentially, what the fuck are they doing? What is this garbage?
Well, I mean, they very well may not know what they're doing right now. I mean, this is just testing the waters, right? I would hope that if they are going to go all in on this area, that they do have some like fictional shows, some dramas in the works or planning to do stuff like that. Cause you know, I don't think they, I would hope that they don't want to just fill it with a bunch of like silly reality style TV shows.
Well, as a consumer, it's been the major plot driven super shows that I've been watching. I mean, you look at shows like, well, most HBO series are pretty solid, but the age of reality television, in my humble opinion, is dead. Like, nobody can take it seriously anymore. The only kind of reality television that we do watch is stuff like Dragons or Pitch This, Pitch That, because it affects not only the person, but the market itself.
True. And they also said that these apps will be featured in the App Store while the show is going on. So I'm not sure what winning gets you, per se, if all the apps are going to be on the App Store anyway. I really don't know.
Just maybe, probably a spot
maybe
on the front
seed
page.
Funding, I don't know. Venture capital.
What's strange to me, and I don't understand, is, are these things going to be inside the Apple? Are they going to live in the Apple Music app? I mean,
yes.
If they're music related, I can kind of understand, but to me, it seems like a weird concept to have video
in a
music app.
It's in the music app, which makes zero sense. I know.
I mean, I wouldn't put it there. And the app, I mean, Apple already did the major redesign of the Apple Music app with iOS 10. And there's
That's okay. They'll just add another tab in iOS 11.
See,
There's
too much in there. So, I mean, you have Beats, the radio. It's Beats One. Beats One.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a whole tab for radio. So it's
right.
Like,
okay,
you know, that makes sense because they've got all these stations and they have their own radio station. I think you can even get Beats One on satellite or something. I don't know if
they have a deal with SiriusXM.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm not like, don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure.
I don't listen to it, so
I don't either.
Yeah.
So are these apps that they're developing? They could be anything, right? It could be like a game.
Yeah.
It could be.
But as with any reality show, they've vetted and chosen particular candidates. There were hundreds of applicants. In fact, I know somebody who applied. They had an app that basically told you when to leave the house to catch your bus.
Okay.
It was kind of like Transit App, but it was a bit more focused on like timing and when you needed to leave, when you needed to wake up, that kind of thing. He got rejected.
Okay.
But I'm not actually sure who got approved, but I think it's like 10 to 12 candidates, maybe something like that. And obviously because we're following the full reality show rubric, naturally one of them will be eliminated every episode.
Well, not just that, but when you look at these competitions, it's not just about having a good idea. It's about having the worst idea and getting them on the show, because people don't want to watch everybody win. Right. They want to watch people
not.
Crash
they
and burn.
See terrible people. They want to see people with dumb apps that make no sense. And you're just like, ha, you deserve to go home.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does anyone get fired?
Counterintuitively, they have a terrible app that they keep on for multiple weeks for audience retention value. It's like,
okay.
Oh, isn't it terrible that that app is still on the thing? How can they keep putting them through every week? It's stupid.
So it's not a episodic, somebody wins, it just continues.
I'm not sure if they're doing the Netflix thing where they're all released at the same time, or if they're releasing one every week. I'm not 100% on how they're actually going to be unveiling that, but yeah, it's very odd.
And who's producing this stuff?
Well, presumably some sort of team at Apple that they've created to produce things. Probably reporting to Eddie Q, I would think.
Well, if they need people to help, I mean, it sounds like a great idea. Jensen Shields would love to join your team.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, you can start Beats 2.
No, thank you.
No, you sure? Okay. Planet of the Podcasts.
No. Ba, ba, ba.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but in terms of big picture for Apple dealing with this media landscape, I think they're really struggling to kind of get a hold of what it is exactly that they want to do or where in the market they want to be. They're kind of throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks almost.
Well, I mean, they want to take business away from Spotify because, you know, this is the kind of funny thing. Okay, because Spotify is still, I think it's number one, or maybe Pandora is still number one.
I'm actually not sure
about
that. But
it's behind,
I mean,
it's Apple Music is definitely behind Spotify, that's
for
sure.
It is, but it's rapidly increasing. They're over 20 million now.
Yeah, no, I know that. You know, either way, actually, regardless of how many people are using it, it's all still kind of useless because none of these things are actually making money, really. I mean, they're making money, but they're not really profitable. Like, Spotify hasn't been able to really figure out how to make their business really profitable and pay musicians, which is really sad, unfortunately. It does say something about, I don't think it says anything negative about the service or the fact that streaming music is bad in any way, because it's not necessarily, but the problem is that like that service doesn't work unless it's at scale. You have to have a lot of people that are paying for it. They don't have that yet. Apple doesn't have that yet. It'll probably come eventually. So that's really a whole nother conversation, is like, how do you pay artists? But so like, I mean, again, going back to Apple, like they obviously want to take a chunk away from Spotify if they can. I'm not sure if they ever made an attempt to try and buy Spotify at all. That would have been a good move.
After they buy
Netflix.
Not
100% sure on that. They might have.
Now, didn't Google try to buy Spotify? I don't. My memory is really vague.
Google
on
did.
This. They didn't want to sell it or something.
I think Apple maybe tried to buy Ardio.
Oh, that's maybe that's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately is now dead.
Yeah, for the most part. They got bought by Pandora, I think. And a lot of their team is working on Pandora right now.
Okay.
I believe.
This is one of those US-centric services only. I don't think we ever got Pandora introduced here
in
Canada.
No, we don't have it here yet. I would think they're planning a rollout at some point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's always weird with those services, dealing with copyrights and so on. The only reason Apple was able to do it worldwide on the same day was because they're Apple.
Right.
They were basically like, look here, fuckers. We're doing this.
We have the technology.
We own you. And they were like, okay. I mean, maybe not that easily, but still pretty easily. I mean, they were in talks for a while about what the subscription price would be. Apple wanted to charge less. They wanted them to charge more. There were other things about like how the royalties per listen would work and things like that. Like they were quibbling over little details, but ultimately they were on board with Apple launching it. It was just like little disputes. Whereas with these smaller startups trying to do streaming services, it's like, well, they just don't have the access that Apple has. They don't have the ability to grab these exclusives or get people on side or sign contracts with the labels. I mean, Spotify probably is the one with the most clout at this point. So they can get stuff. And then you've got Tidal, which is still struggling along, mostly because a few millionaire artists support it. But they're effectively dead in the water. Like, when they first started, the app was garbage and everybody just left it. And then their management team disappeared and there were a bunch of layoffs and all this other stuff happened. They're still kind of going along, but
they had lemonade.
They're mostly just floating on whatever cash they happen to have. So really, it's like Apple Music and Spotify are the only game in town in terms of worldwide streaming services. Because RDO's gone now, and yeah.
If there was going to be a new streaming service that would catch my attention, there'd be two components, well, three components that I would consider major factors. One, the price. What is the subscription cost per month? Mm. Two, what is the quality of the music? Because I love Spotify to death, but a lot of times mid-song, it sounds like they just found a different clip from a different album, and it's infuriating. I mean, yes, I'm streaming it. I get that, but the sound quality is lacking.
Yeah.
But number three, what are the artists getting out of it? Because if I would be willing to pay twice as much per month, knowing that the artist is getting a better deal and for better sound quality. That is something I would invest in for sure.
Hmm. Well, I think Tidal was trying to provide that.
Yeah, but fuck Tidal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I can say about it.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, I think they really set the tone when the unveiling for Tidal was that ridiculous ceremony where all those billionaire artists just got up on that stage and signed this ridiculous Declaration of Independence, like, scroll thing. And Madonna just gets up on the table and, like, yeah, signing it. And you're just like, what the fuck is this shit?
It kind of reminds me of the Magnificent Seven. Everybody was on the stage being like, I am number one. No, I am number one. I am the most important artist. It's like, we get it. You're all billionaires. Well, not billionaires. You're all millionaires. You've made it. Now you want to make something special for us. Okay, I get that. We're going to get exclusive content that no one else is going to get. And then not a few weeks later, this exclusive content is available to everybody. Because guess what? It's the internet. It's going to be available. So if you're gonna create a product that only your subscribers can have, yeah, then you better make certain that that's possible, because it isn't. It's just not possible at all.
Hello, this is Alex Knight from Hologram Radio, here to tell you about a fun new podcast that we recently launched called Serial Sommelier. Each week, David Kahlo and a guest select a random episode of a much beloved 1970s and 1980s Saturday morning cartoon series, review the episode, have some laughs, and of course, pair the perfect sugar cereal with it. Subscribe to Serial Sommelier today in iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and of course, wherever you can find your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious. So you are yourself a Spotify user, right?
I am, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So do you primarily, is that how you like listen to music now? Is it you're all streaming?
It's just ease, honestly. Yeah. And if you want to talk about pure laziness, I switched over from having an iPhone to an Android. And the amount of effort it would take me to reinstall iTunes, a lot of the music that I had on iTunes didn't quite translate because iTunes is iTunes and it likes to switch things up, and it's user end agreements, whatever. So roughly 10,000 of my songs are either warped or missing. So when Spotify came along, I completely forgot about all that music that I have stored in a database because I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to spend how many hours it's going to take to get it back. So yeah, mm-hmm. Spotify is completely taken over in terms of how I listen to music. Unless I'm, of course, listening to vinyl, but that's different.
So you have a turntable. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When did you get into that?
Well, it's not so much I got into it. It's just always been a part of, my family's lifestyle. There's always been records. So the turntable in question, of course, is my mother's turntable. And I don't have as much of a collection as she does. But going back from albums from the 60s forwards, there's always something special. And there's something special about listening to an album from start to finish that I feel like iTunes, when the magic of the iPod was you can pick your songs, create your own playlists, your own playlist became your own album and it became very special to you. And your playlist could be anywhere between 10 to 100 songs. And each song in each place was very, very, very important. And we've kind of lost the art of the album. And also the 90s produced a lot of really shit albums where you have to go out and buy like an I Mother Earth album with three good songs on it and the rest is not that great. But you know, then you have artists that are coming out today and they're producing full blown albums like the Black Keys, great albums from front to back, Flying Lotus. Not every song I would say is particularly a song per se, but it's specifically placed as a prelude to the fault, like for the next song. So the art of listening to albums is coming into play for sure. But when it comes to, you know, from point A to point B on the SkyTrain or driving, Spotify is the way to go, in my opinion, for me. I mean, it really differs from person to person and their own musical and listening tastes. Yeah.
Well, it's one of the things that I brought up today was that, and just reflecting on my own experience and my change of listening habits and where and what and how I listen to music, and you know, now kind of ditching streaming, like going, I was all digital, all MP3 for like a long time, like the last decade. I stopped using CDs. I never got rid of them. I still have my CD collection. And then of course, like a couple of years ago, buying a turntable, sort of slowly getting into vinyl, but didn't get serious until like last year when I like, okay, ditch my crappy turntable, buy a good one, and then it's like, and then upgrade my sound system. It's like, whoa, this is, I don't remember music sounding this good. So I just kept on growing my collection. And now I just feel like since most people, the majority of people listen to streaming music on, you know, these little crappy earbuds that come with their phones and they're listening on their commute. And that's for the most part where they listen to it. I feel like going back to what you were saying, Jensen, about like listening to an album front to back or all the way through too. I just feel like less and less people do that. And also it's almost as if like music becomes background noise that we just listen to it on our commute and we're not really fully engaged in the music. And I've even found myself like, because you know, I grew up in a family that loved music. My dad exposed me to all sorts of music, blues, rock, metal, folk music, and growing up, like he had a record player and stuff like that. And I just feel like it's like even myself for quite a while, even though I would still listen to a full album, it was like it got to the point where that was happening less and less. And I used to be really good at like remembering songs, remembering lyrics. And now I find that I oftentimes like I can't even remember, did I listen to that song? What was that song called? What were the lyrics? Like I don't remember anything about it. And I think that my gut feeling is just because I listen to that stuff on my commute and it is just background noise. I'm not paying attention. I'm not looking at the artwork. I'm not looking at the liner notes and the lyrics and I'm not memorizing that stuff. And I'm not just like sitting on my couch and really listening to every word that artist has to say and try to figure out like, what did they decipher the meaning of that song? You know what I mean? Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
I feel like that experience is just kind of like gone.
Now I remember listening to the Offspring's album, Americana, and just looking through that little booklet, and they had these really awesome graphic designs of like gods and cartoons of that kid like cutting himself, and you know, it was a part of the artwork. It was by the artwork, I mean the artwork of the creation of the album itself. And yes, there's the lyrics right there, and you would be able to sing along, you know, and that album will always have a very special part of my life because it helped change me as an angsty teenager, you
right.
know?
Yeah, exactly. like many of us too. And that's, you know, the biggest complaint that I have about streaming music service on the note of lyrics is that I used to love looking at lyrics, and you couldn't do that with MP3s. And then of course now naturally that's mostly being solved, I think, with Apple Music now
and Google,
right? Yeah. So a lot of these streaming services, I don't know if Spotify is doing it now, but when you play a song, if the information is available, it actually will show you the lyrics for that song, mm-hmm. which is really cool. But we're still missing, I know a lot of people don't care about this, and this is fine, but for me personally, like, I do like reading the liner notes. Like, as a musician myself, I like knowing, like, I remember, you know, you'd read the liner notes and you'd read all the production information, and they'd be like, this, you know, this person uses this equipment. Because as a guitar player, I always wanted to know what my favorite guitar player was using. Like, how did he get that sound? What amp? What strings? You know, what effects pedals? How did he set it up? And a lot of times in the liner notes, it would have like information about the equipment that they would use. And then I would go out and try to buy that equipment, try to replicate that sound. And I just kind of miss that. You don't really get that. And I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if that's something Apple cares about at all. I don't know if that's something that we'll ever get. I don't know. I'm going to try to be optimistic. I mean, I never thought that they would even add lyrics. So the fact that they added lyrics to Apple Music, I think that's great. So that kind of gives me hope that maybe we'll get a little more information, yeah, you know, to try to replace possible. What we used to have in CDs and vinyl.
It's possible. I mean, they do have iTunes extras. That's a thing still.
Barely.
Yeah. But
is that the thing where you like you buy an album and you get like a PDF with?
Yeah.
It's so bad.
I know.
It's really bad.
I know. I think we'll probably see improvements to music in iOS 11, like at WWDC this year, which they announced really early, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in San Jose the first week of June, not Moscone. That sound you hear is every hotel in San Francisco going, and every hotel in San Jose going, woo! Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are mixed feelings about this change, but I think it's a better venue. It's minutes away from Apple campus, so the engineers don't have to travel for hours just to be there.
Right.
They can go and interact with developers and then get right back to their work.
Well, that's eventually going to go away. I mean, once the new Apple campus is completed.
Well, no, because the thing about the campus is the auditorium only seats about 1,000 people. It doesn't have enough room for WWDC unless there's a space in the main building that they've set aside for that purpose. It's probably unlikely, though. They'll be using that space for their employees and all of the top secret work that they're doing, although some of that might be underground. But
wait, yeah. Underground? Are you serious?
Like physically underground?
Yeah, physically underground.
Wow.
In the cone of silence.
The catacombs of silence.
Yeah. The tastefully designed minimalist catacombs of silence.
Well, just be the catacombs will be
coated
just
in aluminum.
Yeah, and they'll just be white walls.
Yes,
white
walls. It's no, the white no it's furniture. The white room that Johnny Ive is always in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what they built
and
for real.
Ex Machina AI telling you to, you know, get a coffee, and because they're the overlords, not you, of course.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But yeah, I think the campus is for employees. They'll probably use the auditorium for product announcements. Depending on when the campus is completed, I think we could see the iPad event or more generally the spring Apple media event at campus 2. They've almost finished the landscaping. The auditorium, I believe, is done. They're just putting finishing touches on stuff. The actual campus itself doesn't necessarily need to be finished. The auditorium is kind of off to the side. So they could theoretically hold an event there and continue construction on the actual campus itself without interfering with the event. So either that event will be there or the next one when they announce the iPhone in September. Either one will be the first time that people get to go to campus too and see the new space.
So they'll have these facilities to announce a product that we already know is coming. We yeah. already roughly know what it's going to look like, and we already know what features will be removed from. I'm just not that enthused about what Apple is doing right now. It just seems like they have the technology to create something new and awesome and amazing. But I haven't seen anything yet. I haven't seen anything in a very long time.
Oh, you're about to.
Oh, yeah?
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this
yeah,
too.
We
but,
have.
But ad nauseum. But I mean, but, just to say to that, there is a lot of innovation happening, but it's like, the thing with innovation is that it oftentimes is incremental, and it's very rare that you are able to make something that is so radically new, so different. I mean, the iPad, I guess, was a big deal. I mean, the original iPhone launch was a big deal, but it's not now. Like, smartphones are so ubiquitous. There's only so much you can do with like the design of a rectangular slab of metal that goes in your pocket too, right? So, I mean, obviously there are substantial changes internally. I understand. Michael and I have talked about this, and I do get it. I do get it why a lot of people maybe feel bored, because, you know...
Well, we're a generation of bored people.
Well, the thing is there's a perception thing, is that when you have multiple generations of phones that more or less look the same... For the average consumer that's not a total tech nerd like us and like absorbed in what actually is going on in the space,
yeah,
at face value, you go, oh, okay, so maybe it has a new camera and whatever, but it's like there's the value perception. It's like, well, it looked like last year's model and it looked like the model before that, but it's actually like the guts are all new.
Yeah.
It's a completely new device.
And the 7, it's night and day.
Well, even between the 6 and the 6S, the guts were like all new processor, all new camera. Like it was like a significantly better product. The 3D touch was like a whole new layer of interacting with
and
the device.
Faster touch ID.
Faster touch ID. Like all those little improvements make it a better experience, but I totally get it why people are bored. And to what Michael was saying, yes, the new iPhone 8, it's long been rumored. I mean, so much information is, just not necessarily even leaks, but like all the patents that are public that Apple publishes and all the information that we hear about the materials that they're working with supposedly on this new phone too. I mean, we know, like, Jensen, like this new iPhone 8 is supposed to be a completely new design. So, like, there are rumors now that basically, strong rumors, and you could, I mean, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure this out, because you look at all the trends with smartphone design, is that smartphones are getting, they've obviously gotten bigger over the years, but there's also been a trend, you can see this with Samsung, with LG,
with
everybody,
Edge.
That they're getting rid of the bezels. Because basically the goal is to have, you just want to see screen. You don't want to see a border of metal around
the phone. Yeah, yeah.
So now the iPhone 8 is supposedly supposed to be edge-to-edge glass. But not only that, they're not going to be using, I think, LCD technology for the screen.
No, it's OLED.
So it's going to be using a new OLED screen, which is going to be way better, because they'll be able to do things like when your iPhone wakes up. For example, you may only, instead of, this is just actually a big waste of power. Like, I only want to see maybe some information on my screen, like the time and maybe the weather or a calendar event that pops up. But to light every single pixel is a huge battery waste.
Yeah.
With the OLED screen, you can individually basically light a specific pixel. So, for example, like basically this new iPhone, you the idea is, I guess, when you, when the screen wakes, is that instead of this whole display lighting up, it'll just be like the time will just show up and everything else is black, right?
I feel like I've seen this
Samsung, I mean, OLED it has existed
Black Mirror.
For a while.
Yeah.
OLED has existed for a while in other phones, but the thing is that, Is it a cost thing? Why haven't they already done OLED
It's a cost
devices?
Thing, and also the time wasn't quite right. They've been working on a number of other technologies that are basically coming together for the first time in this device.
Yeah.
So you've got a phone where essentially the entire front of the phone is a screen. There is nothing else. It is just screen. Touch ID is baked into the
that's
display.
The other thing
it's not
say.
A button anymore.
No more buttons.
We're past buttons. There will be what is essentially a touch bar at the bottom.
Yeah.
So that the whole thing is going to be one panel, but there will be a strip at the bottom that's designated for system level UX functions. And there will probably be an API that allows developers to put stuff from their app into that bar. Kind of like the function bar on the iPad Pro, where it's got like different formatting options
and
things
like
that.
Wouldn't this be more like, and I don't know if you've seen this, Jansen, but the newest MacBook Pros,
that
touch bar?
Touch bar.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, I said touch bar. Okay. Yeah.
It's like a bar that you can touch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very cool. Yeah. So, on the one hand, yeah, it's going to kind of look like Android, but on the other hand, it's going to be way more than that. Because, yeah, you'll have the home button, but then it'll also have camera controls if you have the camera open. It'll have share buttons or like buttons or whatever if you're in Facebook or Twitter. It'll just extend the UI to the point where they can put a bunch of things in that bar, and then the app above it is just 100% content. So you've got this phone where it's this giant glass panel. You're just looking at the app, basically. There's nothing else between you and the app because the entire front of the phone is the app, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of buttons are moved down to the bottom, and then above that, all you have is content. So like Instagram, you could just be scrolling through these massive pictures that people have posted, and then all the things are at the bottom. But for like 90% of the phone screen size, you've got just the photos.
Yeah. I mean, to give Apple credit too, like last year with the iPhone 7, this is an eyesore, by the way. The biggest issue that I have and that many people have is seeing these unsightly, ugly antenna lines, right?
Yes.
Because you have to have these for the, it's obviously for cellular. So last year they finally, it was actually technologically difficult to do with the design of the aluminum, but they managed to somehow, maybe Michael can explain this because I don't even remember how the hell they did this, but now they basically got rid of these two big ugly antenna lines. So it's much cleaner.
They're not
design.
That ugly.
Do we know how they did that? They explained
they still have the antenna lines. But
they're barely visible.
The
they're not.
And yeah, you can barely
right, they're
see
there,
them.
I think, underneath the metal, isn't it?
Oh, no. There's still that line of plastic. It just runs just along the very edge of the top and bottom so that you can't really see it. I mean, on the silver phone, it's a lot more obvious, but on the matte black and jet black models, it's effectively invisible for the most part. If you shine a bright light on it, you can see them.
And actually, but has there been any more information about this new liquid metal technology that they're working on?
Whoa. Okay. Are we talking about the T1000 here?
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's where I was going with this.
So
it's actually a thing, liquid metal.
Yeah, it is. That's still up in the air. I want to say that they're going to use it, but there's no evidence of that currently.
Right.
So
for those, though, just very quickly, explain exactly what it is.
Okay. So liquid metal is a material that Apple has a perpetual exclusive license to use in consumer electronics. And what liquid metal is, it's essentially the brand name for bulk metallic glass, which is a metallic compound that has the properties of glass. It has an amorphous atomic structure that enables it to absorb massive amounts of kinetic energy without breaking. It is effectively corrosion proof. It cannot rust. It can be dunked in acid and not degrade. It's used for...
That's a legitimate use case. I frequently find my phone falling into vats of acid.
Yeah. When you too have a tragic Batman villain accident, your phone will be just fine.
George Washington would dip somebody's hand into a vial of acid at a party. He did that. It's true. Look it up.
He's a classy guy.
Okay.
But if it were a phone, everything's just peachy keen.
Yes, exactly. Maybe not the glass, but the rest of it would be fine. Although glass resists acid. So
TLDR, it's an amazing, amazing material.
Yes.
That's perfectly suited for something that people tend to drop.
Yes. And notably, in some formulations of the material, it is radio transparent.
Ah, right.
Meaning a cell phone antenna would go right through it as if it weren't there.
So that means we don't need to see any antenna lines. Correct. Whatsoever.
But could you see through the phone?
No.
Aww.
However, there is also a patent to make transparent liquid metal using sapphire as a catalyst. They can actually shift.
Sounds expensive.
The atomic structure of the metallic glass so that it becomes transparent instead of opaque. So it's like, you know how you seed crystal growth? Like you put a little crystal in and it just makes the big crystal.
Okay.
So it's like that. They basically dope the liquid metal with sapphire and it basically shifts the entire matrix into a transparent organization. So you end up with a sheet of metal that's just as durable, just as strong, just as corrosion resistant, just as radio transparent, except you can see through it.
Is this material they can use on a spacecraft, maybe?
I would count on it. Yes, it's definitely possible.
I mean, it sounds amazing.
You know, there's a movie that came out more than 10 years ago, a Minority Report.
That's a good movie.
It's a good movie. And well, the plot was decent, but what I really loved about this movie was it predicted a lot of future tech. People believing in or being able to see the future aside, driverless cars. Yep. The idea of tablets, everything like that. A lot of these prophecies.
Heads up displays too.
It's coming true, and they did a really good job showing a believable future, and that's not too far away. Mm-hmm. And which is why I'm bringing up the idea. Well, you brought it up earlier. Transparent tablets or transparent phones, because that to me is the next step. You have this, what would look like an acetate paper. And be able to use that as a means to communicate with people.
Possibly. I think there's still something to be said for opacity on devices, just because seeing through it isn't necessarily the best option
that
at all times.
Sounds dangerous.
Might lose
it. For augmented reality, certainly you would want something that can control its opacity. General use, you would probably want it to be opaque, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, like a future iPhone, it could be completely solid seemingly, and then you hold it up and activate the augmented reality mode, and it shifts to be completely transparent, and you just see like things overlaid through it like a magic lens.
And then you're like, where'd my phone go?
Well, speaking of lenses, they could create contact lenses that have the ability.
That's a lot further down the road.
Are you sure it's on next Tuesday? Yeah.
That level of miniaturization.
We'll have a hard enough
tough.
Time getting it into Ray-Bans, let alone contact lenses.
It's really easy for me to jump from future tech to way in the future tech.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet, but
no.
You know.
But interesting times ahead, and we do live in very interesting times right now, as all of this stuff is so rapidly being developed, and we've talked very recently about how fast things like AR and VR is just seems to be like steamrolling. So much money is being invested in in these areas, which, and it's just great to actually, because as kids, like that's stuff we wanted to see. Like we always thought like the concept of VR when, I remember when Nintendo released the Virtual Boy, it's like, oh man, like virtual reality, it sounds so cool and futuristic. And now we're like, we're here and it's actually feasible and it doesn't look like crap.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember seeing my first digital camera back in high school because I'm that old.
Yeah, and, you and me both.
Yeah, and I just remember seeing this bulky piece of machinery that the person who was holding it wouldn't allow anybody going near it because it was expensive. And I feel like the same thing goes for virtual reality cameras. You know, the concept of taking a picture in every direction, those cameras are morbidly expensive. But it didn't take long for digital cameras to get reasonably priced. And not just reasonably priced, but put as an option into a smartphone. So the moment we are able to create virtual reality cameras for the masses at a discount price, media is going to change so much. I mean, no more Instagram of a single picture, choose your filter.
Right.
Now it's going to be, hey, I went to this concert last Tuesday. Want right. to check it out?
Yep.
Yeah, sure. You know, the acetate paper goes over your Ray-Bans and then kablamo. You get to experience what I experienced because, you know, at a concert, I put on this silly hat and took pictures of everything around me. But which leads me to this next thing. At what point does this completely invade people's privacy? And if you're the one wearing this virtual reality helmet at a concert because it's the best idea ever, just like how everybody puts up their phones at a TED Talk, everybody's going to be in these spaces wearing virtual reality camera headsets, and nobody's going to actually be experiencing the show because they're too busy, you know, recording it for other people.
Well, this is like something that Black Mirror has kind of covered so brilliantly, even though it's fictional, but... Yeah, that is a likely possibility as well. So yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But that's, we could sit here and talk for hours about that. but unfortunately, we can't because we're basically out of time. But it was fantastic that you joined us today. So thank you very much, Jensen.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there. And wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.